This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.
For co-host Bea Bonner, I'm Randy Eccles. Community Voices is conversations with neighbors, artists, and area business people, along with events you might have missed. The UIS Ecce Series panel, the status of Black Lives Matter, a shift in policy, culture, justice, and reform, continues with Dr. Ty Dooley.
I would also want to point out one other sort of thing, and this is just sort of a definition for public policy, and I always like to say this because it's really, really important. Public policy and politics. This notion of politics is the authoritative allocation of values and capital. So the political process allocates resources and our values for what we deem as important for society and a nation. When we think about the notion of public policy, it's what government at whatever level, whether we're talking about state or local or national or colleges and universities, it's what they choose to do or not to do, what administrative rules they choose to adopt or they don't adopt. And so within that context, then, we think about the overly aggressive use of force, utilization of force by police on African-Americans. It does illustrate a fundamental dissonance, I think, in the American polity. The ideal of justice and liberty, you know, embodied in the Constitution, and when we say the Pledge of Allegiance, liberty and justice for all. We have that juxtaposed with the reality of suffering and death at the hands of frontline law enforcement as they mete out their social order on African-Americans to promote the concept and this notion of whiteness. When we think about African-Americans in this country, we have to also think about this notion of a denial of rights and protections and liberties being really in stark contrast to the Lockean ideals, really, of what the purpose of government is supposed to guarantee. And that really is a narrative when we think about the Black Lives Matter movement now in 2021, as we are slowly moving out of the pandemic, God willing, and we move really toward opening up and revitalizing our society. But what type of society are we going to revitalize? What type of society are we going to have? More specifically, when we think about these actions of law enforcement and police, there's a number of studies that are out there. Are this notion of administrative rules can be very impactful and reducing the number of Black and brown bodies that have been murdered and decimated at the hands of frontline law enforcement. That's an extraordinary important thing. And so what sort of administrative rules are we talking about? Adopting rules where officers have to de-escalate a situation. Adopting rules where officers are banned from using chokeholds and strangling civilians. Adopting administrative rules where officers cannot fire on unarmed citizens. Adopting administrative rules where law enforcement can't shoot people in the back. Adopting administrative rules where other officers have to go ahead and intervene, and there's a civilian review board at any point after a gun is fired and someone is killed. Ultimately, that's the ultimate sort of thing, right? And I know some folks will say, well, this person wasn't comporting themselves appropriately, or they're being rude, or they maybe had mental health issues, but that doesn't warrant a death sentence. That's summarized some of the things that I've looked at and some of the outputs of the research that was just completed.
Justin, back to you. We see differences in opportunity for African Americans in the American education system, starting from access to pre-K through graduate schools. Shift and continue talking about systemic racism, but specifically talk about broadly about systemic racism in education and how Black Lives Matter as a theme can make an impact on leadership, curriculum, performance, opportunities, and success for Black students.
Huge disparities in our American educational systems that I think when we look at the aggregate numbers, we see that who goes to college and who graduates, it's most often not our Black non-white peers, right? And when we're talking about Black students, they're the ones who are typically rounding out that pool of people, right? And they're the ones who are most greatly impacted by the list of things you stated in forms of performance. But in breaking it down, the tenets and principles of what Black Lives Matter represent could have a positive impact on the K-12 or K-16 pipeline in one fundamental way. by centering equity. I think it's so, if we learn to practice it, it can be so powerful of a tool when we're looking at systemic racism and oppression that continue to amorph and morph themselves and generation after generation. I'm going to continue to preach it. And when we think about Black Lives Matter, the origin is addressing the disproportionate statistics that we see with Black bodies, Black and brown bodies being murdered. It's also that contact with the criminal justice system at large. We can take that same focus and map it on our educational arena and think about, okay, what are we doing in the educational arena that mirrors that? I think we criminalize and label and track students, right? So how do we get away from that practice that is also closely associated with what happens in criminal justice or just in our everyday lives? If we can use a little bit of equitable approaches and getting away from tracking students. And I think ultimately we lessen that road ahead for them. We lessen the difficulty. But we know there's a growing body of research and correlation between what's happening in the legal system and in the school system. And you create the school to prison pipeline. And I think how we begin to get around that is taking a look at those zero tolerance policies. Zero tolerance policies, whether directly or indirectly practiced, they more or less filter your juveniles into these criminal justice systems. So you have more Black students facing expulsions, suspensions, direct confrontation with authority figures, peers. You have all these things happening. And even when you think about that, you have a lot of dropouts. Now who's entering the higher educational post-secondary arena? But then when we think about state or, you know, districts that don't practice the zero tolerance policy, right? Like Illinois, we banned it, SB 100, I think. We don't have a zero tolerance policy, but that doesn't mean you don't have a culture of it that has laid dormant for so many years. Some of those things stick around. And I think that begins to hinder as well what we think about our students. One way I think we begin to address it is we have to create spaces and educational arenas that truly value our students, like how we truly value human life when it comes to Black Lives Matter. We have to, of course, get to the funding issue. How are we resourcing areas, whether that's urban areas or rural areas? How are these schools being resourced and what kind of funds are there? Again, what kind of teachers and administrators are running these schools or teaching our students? Outside of that, once you make the hire, what trainings and workshops and professional development trainings can you put in front of them around diversity, equity, inclusion, justice? It's so much out there. But are we putting those teachers in positions to be culturally responsive? Are we putting our administrators in a position to be culturally responsive to our student needs? And then finally, I think instituting a culture of, do I have to go for the punitive measures, right? Do I have to have a culture where I'm disciplining the student in a form of like a tracking system? I don't think we have to. I think we can have more trauma-informed curriculums. I think we can have more de-escalation. I think Dr. Dooley just spoke about it, just other methods to just have a conversation with the student. How can we de-escalate the situation? And I think finally, I don't believe in suspending students. I don't believe in expelling students. I believe there's still ways to reach that student through alternative ways and creating spaces and putting more social services in schools so that they're not missing that valuable seat time and that they're still in the osmosis of the learning environment. I think those would be some of the ways that we could use the Black Lives Matter theme and mantra and principle to create and shape that type of school environment and help with the leaky pipeline that we have.
The challenge that we're having is how can we get these things implemented. And that's really the challenge, whether we're talking about housing, where there are issues associated with that, related to discrimination and bias and racism, whether we were talking about the criminal justice system, which is the primary focus, I think, today. There's tremendous sort of issues there. We're only talking about Black bodies and public spaces, which we can basically say white spaces and racism that exists there. Where we're talking about higher education, as Director Rose has aptly sort of pointed out, the solutions I think are available and are there. What is that issue though? Is how do we go ahead though and get those solutions applied to these spaces, to these areas? And so that's really sort of, I think, the challenge that we'll have in 2021 and in the future. It seems to me, I think Tiffany or Justin said it a little earlier, all we're trying to do, it's a human rights issue. We just want to have the same opportunities and the same rules apply, right, that apply to the dominant culture, white culture, to everybody else. That's it. That's what we're trying to do. It's how do we get to that point? And you can always tell when you're asking to put resources behind something, then that's when the challenge and then the pushback typically happens.
As we continue to go through these issues, and that's a great point of like, how do we make these changes that we're, you know, pointing out that needs to happen? My research also focuses on health disparities and inequities in policy for African Americans. This topic has become incredibly important in the wake of the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic. As I discuss in my healthcare law class, health is more than just access to healthcare. Health encompasses access to high quality education that we've talked about, employment, stable housing, as Dr. Dooley just mentioned, safe neighborhoods, fresh food, clean water, air, outdoor space, all of the things that we're talking about today. Access to healthcare, quality of the healthcare you receive, obviously is a key health determinant, but it's not the only one. When we think about everything we're talking about, being able to walk down the street and not fear being gunned down, that's part of health. We find literature identifies really two important terms and concepts with respect to the link between race and poor health that we find in the U.S. The notion of health disparities, meaning that even when you take into consideration income, neighborhood, comorbid illnesses, health insurance type, all the factors that are typically used to explain racial disparities, health outcomes are still worse for Blacks than for whites in the U.S. Something else is going on. A Black person will live on average about 3 fewer years than a white person with the same amount of income in the U.S. There's also this term called excess deaths, which explains the sad fact that if Blacks and whites had the same mortality rate, nearly 100,000 fewer Black lives would be lost each year in the U.S. So when we talk about Black Lives Matter, we can't ignore the 100,000 Black lives that are lost each year simply due to these health disparities. Data informs us that Black people in the U.S. are more likely to suffer from food insecurity, to live in high violent crime neighborhoods. Those with high air pollution have higher rates of obesity among adults. Black children have a 500% higher death rate from asthma as compared to white children. We saw the ACA come in, the Affordable Care Act, which has been monumental in narrowing some of the racial and ethnic gaps in access to health insurance and care. But Blacks and Hispanic Americans, so Black and brown bodies in the U.S. are still less likely than whites to have health coverage, and they're more likely to avoid care because of cost. Even when they are able to have health insurance or able to access care, we find that Blacks on average wait longer to receive care than whites. They encounter unconscious bias from their medical providers. In the African American community, we see a lot of mistrust. There's definitely reasons for that mistrust due to what we've seen from conscious and unconscious bias by medical providers. Talk about Tuskegee experiment. So many examples we could talk about today. Doctors are less likely to provide medical intervention for Black patients. In research has shown doctors often completely dismiss symptoms. They ignore the pain of Black patients. A recent study found that Black women are more than 3 times more likely to have a maternal death than white women in the U.S. There's also the race-related stress index, which is something I think is great to talk about when we think about there's something else going on that we're not able to necessarily chalk up to all the other factors we typically think about. This index is a research tool that measures the stress experienced by African Americans and a result of their daily encounters with racism and discrimination. Studies using this tool and others like the RRSI have found that merely being Black in America triggers exposure to stressors linked to premature biological aging. Blacks get sick at a younger age. they have more severe illnesses and are aging more rapidly than whites in the U.S. as a result of this cumulative stress that they encounter. While watching these horrific acts, we mentioned George Floyd. We mentioned seeing him beg for his life, call out for his mother. We heard and read about Breonna Taylor and many other examples we can talk about. The recent pastor in Killeen, Texas that was gunned down in his front yard. While we watch those things, and that's stress-inducing for our entire community, our entire society here in the U.S.
Dr. Tess Dooley on stress and racism. We'll return to the UIS HA series panel, The Status of Black Lives Matter, A Shift in Policy, Culture, Justice, and Reform. Community Voices is a way to get to know your neighbors in these isolated times. Community Voices airs weekdays at noon and Saturdays at 5 p.m. When we return, more on Black Lives Matter.
This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.